dbkmediaservices.com.
Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs and Bruce Knox.
Well, welcome, SVC fans, to SVC Sports Talk. This is show 142, brought to you, as always, by the Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe. I am Bruce Knox, DBK Media Services. I'll once again be talking with our SVC Sports Zone guru, the one and only Shane Combs. Shane, how you doing this evening?
Great, Bruce. Looking forward to another great show. Been a busy week. I know I've been in the gym Tuesday through Saturday, I think it was, watching basketball. So excited to talk a lot with you about some of the things I was watching and getting some feedback on.
Yeah, and so you kind of got your fill this week, but I'm sure there's always room for more with Shane Combs. What kind of feedback did you get this week?
A couple topics really jumped out at me that really intrigued me. People talking about experience and chemistry. Those were two words that were coming up quite a bit. I think early in the year, we try to figure out these new rosters we're seeing, maybe some schools hit by graduation really hard in the past year. And I'm going to explain a little bit of those key things, even have a guest here that's a familiar voice that we'll get to here in a little bit that's going to help do that a little bit. And then a lot of question marks out there. The start of the Uniota girls has certainly brought on discussion. The boys' league, this race for second place, or second place chase is the way one fan put it. So some interesting things. I think again, we're in for a great show. I think fans really sit back, relax here over the next 40 minutes to an hour. We're going to talk some really good SVC basketball.
All right. As always, this episode is brought to you by the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe. Soccer, pizza, inflatables, arcades, parties. It's a great place for people of all ages. So for your next party or group event, give them a call at 740-773-PLAY. That's 773-7529. You can find them on the web at www.triplecrownfamilyfuncenter.com. All one word. All kinds of fun under one roof. And that's the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, located off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. Well, ladies first this week, Shane. 1 week of play, just two games. It seems like people really are full of opinions on how things are going. What'd you come away with for the week?
Well, they are. I think what happens is, you know, we do this in sports society, be it a Monday morning coming off an NFL week or a college week. I think it's just a normal sports reaction. We kind of take what we just watched most recently and kind of form our opinions from that. Sometimes that's legit. Sometimes that's a little unfair. You know, you come out of the first week with only two teams at 2-0, with Westfall and Huntington, and then you have a bunch of teams there at 1-1, and then Adena and Uniota down there at 0-2. But, you know, more than the records, Bruce, I guess I just kind of start to look and see if I can just get a feel for what each team is going to look like. What's their identity? What are some of the things that they're going to do well? What are some of the things that from the first league round to the second league round they're going to have to improve on? And you know what I did, Bruce, is I kind of went out this week and I went back to a familiar voice here on SVC Sports Talk. Obviously good friend, Eric Snyder, girls basketball coach over at Huntington. And I asked him just to kind of give some audio and help us out this week in describing the league. Obviously, his Lady Huntsman off to a good start. I tell you what, do we have that his first response there where he's breaking down the league?
The league this year, with the start that we've had, is, I think, surprised a lot of people. But if you look back to what some of the teams lost last year, there's some teams that still, in this early stages, trying to find their identities. And I think that's a big reason why, on paper, some of the people look at some of these games and some of the things that's happened early and says, wow, that's a shocker, that's a surprise. And I'm not real sure if it's time to hit the panic button. button on all the things that's happened so far. Just with, you know, we're only about 2 or 3 weeks into this. Had some teams with volleyball runs that kids haven't been in the gym that much, and still got a lot of kids playing different roles this year in the league. So whenever you do have that and you're playing a different role, having to move a kid from being, you know, maybe the third or fourth option on a team from last year to now, all of a sudden they're up on everybody's scouting report at the top. That's a big switch and that's a big change. So I think just after the first couple weeks, it's kind of a filling out point. And I think here in a couple weeks after everybody gets settled in, I think you'll see more consistent basketball and probably not as many maybe different surprises as per se as what people think on paper.
Really well said there by Eric. You know, Bruce, we talked about this a little bit on the show, and you know, he's talking about new identity and kids not being in the gym and taking on different roles. Yeah, I look back at some old scouting reports. I know that's something you and I had discussed off the air last week. Yeah. And I think as we talk about it a little bit, I think there's some questions that'll come in from fans. I really think moving forward, this will be a topic that's kind of a neat one to look at. But I look back at some old scouting reports from last year, and then was comparing it to this year. Take Uniota girls, for example. They're off to the tough start. They have a couple kids this year that are showing up 1-2 on the scouting report. If you look back last year, showed up anywhere from 5 to maybe 7 or 8. So what happens by that, one, their responsibility and the pressure and what they're asked to do is obviously increased. But two, the attention they get from the defense. You know, all of a sudden, the way you're going to guard a seventh or eighth man that's coming off the bench compared to a kid that's now drawing maybe one of the elite defenders in the league every night, that's a big difference. So some of those different things is kind of where some of the chemistry and experience came into my mind. I thought rather than the fans just getting my take while I had Eric, I went ahead and asked him, you know, What's some of the impact that an experienced team goes through and how it affects some chemistry? And here's what he had to say.
It's a big positive as a coach to have an experienced basketball team that you've had for 2 or 3 years and that's been in your system, just because basically they already know your system, what you're running. In practice, you're not breaking down every single aspect of defensively what you're trying to accomplish, offensively what we're trying to do here, what look we're trying to get here. Where an experienced team, you're tweaking everything. You're now to the point where they're reading what the other defense is now giving them and what options they have off that, just not the first option and where they should go originally, and then things break down from there. So the difference from a coaching aspect wise is in practice you can really, really actually break down and what your system is and just tweak it as you go instead of throwing everything in and teaching it from the very beginning and taking that time in practice. The chemistry factor in girls, I believe, is a huge part in having an experienced team, because I think with girls, the longer they've played with each other, these girls have played 3 or 4 years together, I think the chemistry aspect in girls basketball is a lot bigger factor than with boys basketball. I think you can throw in a freshman or a sophomore, a couple of them into the mix in boys basketball, and I think just in general, you know, they're going to play well with each other. They're going to, the flow of the game is already there. They're going to understand, you know, for the most part, what's wanted and what's needed. I think with girls, I think it really is a factor there where you see experienced girls basketball teams that need to play together 2 or 3 years to gain that chemistry with one another and for them to be comfortable with one another on, hey, where's my teammate going to be here on this particular play, or defense. Do they have my back here? And so I think chemistry-wise of having an experienced girls basketball team, I think that is the biggest difference between whenever you're asking the question between girls and boys, is with the girls' side of it, the chemistry in which they have, in which they have to grow into with, it will take a longer process, I believe, than what it would with boys.
Well, Bruce, I thought it was a really neat topic to not only ask Eric about that, but to have him, because, you know, keep in mind, most SVC fans already know this. Eric's coached on the boys' side. He's coached girls' side. He's coached college basketball. He's dealt with a lot of different age groups, and he's even gone down and helped in the elementary in a lot of different areas. So he has a lot of perspective when it comes to this type of thing. And I thought the one thing that I caught myself thinking about as listening to Eric on his feedback there was, on the girls' side, a lot of times physically they're ready to go. Mm-hmm. Freshman, sophomore year, you know, we talked about that a little bit last week, so you don't get that as much. You know, there's a couple young boys right now playing some varsity basketball, and you watch them out there, you see a lot of what he's talking about. They understand the game, they're able to flow into the game, they're able to fit right in scheme. Mm-hmm. But where the difference there is on the experience is simply physically. They're very skilled, but they're not quite physically ready to impact. So you'll see a lot of freshmen, sophomores on varsity and the girls' side, and they're already physically controlling the glass. They're already physically being able to defend and so forth, where on the boys' side, it is intriguing because you take a Westfall. Here they are 3 years later, and they look like a completely different group physically, where, you know, you'll watch a couple of these younger boys out there playing, and you see a little difference. So I thought that that chemistry answer was intriguing. Well, before we move on, obviously, Bruce, with Huntington off to a fast start, I wanted to be fair to Eric and give him a chance to highlight some of his roster and what makes Huntington go.
With us this year, we really like the start we've got off to. We've been playing very unselfish basketball. I think offensively, which I think shows in our point production right now. I know we're averaging. We're averaging in the low 50s right now offensively, which is something consistently that we hadn't got in the past. You know, there'd be a game here or there in the past couple of years where everything would flow and everything would work right in the game. But then, you know, we might go two or three games and not see that consistency a bit. So that's what I'm pleased with the most with this group so far here early, is the consistency both offensively and then defensively. I thought we've, you know, we've really been solid again, and that's something that we've kind of hung our hat on for the last couple of years anyway. So I've been happy on both sides of the basketball. The other thing that's helped us a lot this year and to get into a good groove and get off to a fast start is our backcourt of two seniors, Ariel Sams and Carlon Cox. I thought they've played really, really well on both sides of the basketball, and that just generates and starts everything for us, not only defensively, but even offensively, and getting us into a nice rhythm and a nice flow. We have kids that we really like that we've scored in all kinds of different aspects. I know this year, you know, our first game, I think we had seven kids score just in the first quarter, if I remember right, and we've had that throughout. So we've really showed the ability to be able to score in different areas and spread around the scoring. Jillian, she's a really nice spot up shooter for us, and we've been getting her good looks where she's got a matchup where she gets her feet set, she can really stroke it. We have Delana, which is always a good inside out presence for us, and we really like her role on what she does for us offensively to give us that kind of that combo look, and she can get the job done on the perimeter, and also she's good, strong on the inside also. And then Kennedy DeBoard, she's one of the probably the person that, if you want to say that doesn't pop up maybe as much on scouting reports, but is so important for our winning games and us continuing to grow. Just her role that she plays with defensively, she's always in the right position. Rebounding wise, she's probably our best rebounder just because she understands, you know, the position she needs and box out and where she's getting. And she's also been a bright spot for us also offensively, because I've really thought, and we've really been proud on what she's gave us offensively this year. She's really starting to look to be more aggressive and underneath and then post moves and things like that. So with saying all that, that's just our five starters. Our bench came through huge against Uniota and is continuing to grow. And if we're going to have any success at all and continue the success down the road, we've got to have our bench players continue to understand their role and come in and do what they've exactly done. Ricky McGill comes in and she gives us another offensive threat. Right from the bench, Brooklyn Neighbors, another senior for us, who's been around and understands what we're trying to do here and trying to accomplish. Kaylin Ashcraft, a post player for us, she's a senior also. She's one of those kids that you really like because she played JV for the past 3 years and kept telling her, hey, keep getting better, keep working on that, and now all of a sudden here. Her senior year, you can really see that kind of paying off with her commitment to what she was doing and the time and the things that she was working on. So with all those things combined, like I said, it's got us off to a solid start, and we like where we're at right now. We just got to keep on getting that consistency every day in practice, coming in. Keep on working on the things that we need to be working on, getting better in certain aspects, and just show up to play and see what happens on a nightly basis.
Again, that's Eric Snyder, head coach, girls basketball program out at Huntington. Lady Huntsman off to a 2-0 start, 4-1 overall, and obviously he described the roster better than anyone else could do so, as a coach that's brought this group up, doing a super job out there, Bruce. I know we joke with him a lot, but yeah. It's a situation where he was taking over a program where you go back over the previous 5, 6, 7 years, they probably didn't even win a total of 10 games. Yeah. And so he's already progressively taking that. He's won a sectional championship in just his first couple of years, and has them off to a nice start. So again, it's a group that the key to them is on the defensive end. They're not a tall team, and to be honest, other than Carlon Cox, they're not a fast team. So it's a team that they have to not turn it over. They have to take good shots, and then they have to really bring it on the defensive end every night, and that'll be a factor. So, again, appreciate Eric joining us, and I certainly it's kind of good to hear his voice on SVC Sports Talk again. For our longtime listeners, Bruce, he's a voice that used to be on here with us weekly throughout the basketball season.
I miss old Eric. I really do. I think he was with us the very first winter and into the spring, maybe. I don't really remember, but he was with us, and I do remember there was one time though that someone out there disagreed with him, and this is what he had to say about that.
I can't believe that there's someone out there that might even disagree with something I said.
he was always good for about a line a week that that would probably go into our archives.
Yeah, he sure. Also had some quotes there on food and other issues that won't bother to play. But Eric, if you are listening, we do miss you from time to time, and it's great to hear you back on SVC Sports Talk. Well, last week we started back with a segment the fans seem to enjoy, and this week's questions are going to have you talking about the players who are helping win games in a variety of ways.
Well, the fast break segment, Bruce, be brought to our listeners by Crown Hill Golf Club. That's located out U.S. Route 22 west in Williamsport, just minutes from Route 104. What you need to do for more details, give them a call at the course there, 740-986-GOLF. That's 986-4653. Make sure you ask for Dave or Kevin. Tell them SVCSportsZone.com sent you. I'm waiting for the week, Bruce, where we're not going to be able to tell people to go ahead and keep playing. playing golf. Yeah, but after church today, went over to courthouse and had a little lunch with mom and dad. And we were coming back by JC's there, people out there again. So, I mean, again, it's an opportunity to get up to Crown Hill Golf Club, let them know. And I'm sure that Dave and Kevin do a real good job of sitting down with you and seeing how many times you think you'll come up from this area. What can we do? They're smaller packages membership wise. They do super, super people. The course really as nice as any course we have, pretty much inside of an hour drive in any direction. They do a super job up there. So what we're going to do here again this week with our fast break, Bruce, is we'll give four questions. And this week's questions kind of looking maybe beyond the scoring column, and as you said, they're leading in and maybe looking for some things, some of the different intangibles that helping some of these teams get off to a winning start. So if you're okay with that, Bruce, let's go ahead and with this week's version of the Fast Break.
Last week, you told fans to watch rebounding. Who really did the job on the glass to help their team be successful?
Well, we certainly have some great rebounders in our league, and what I was referencing there, Bruce, was beyond the obvious. You know, some of the big guys like a Swingle, Hosley, those are guys that are common sense rebounders. They're going to clean the glass every night. What I was speaking of was with all the guards around the league, we're going to need some of these versatile swing guys, if you will, off the wings to get in and get some jobs done, the job done on the glass. Anderson of Westfall, when I watched him this weekend, doing a great job of that, his versatility as well. As Hall of Adina was outstanding, and what makes those guys so unique is they can pull the defensive glass and they can just turn and go with it, which really allows their team those two particular teams to play fast. On the girls' side, you won't find a better rebounder than the Blanton girl at Piketon. She's outstanding. But again, some of the versatility, when I look at kids like Wheeler and Skeens there at Southeastern, Collins is going to continue to grow as a younger player. But versatile players like Wheeler and Skeens, maybe Unger at Zane Trace is another one that comes to my mind. Their ability to rebound and start to break can really help turn some of their defensive stops into some easier opportunities on the other end.
Who has jumped out at you defensively in the first week of league play?
You know, Bruce, on the boys' side, this particular weekend, more than individuals, was a couple schemes that I was watching. With Uniode and Westfall, they're right to the top of the standings. They're utilizing some three-quarter court pressure, and when you watch them run it, they both do it with a little bit different alignment. They probably don't let me sit here and say exactly what they do and give the old league scouting report, but nonetheless, I don't know how much they're doing it to turn you over as much as I think they are trying to just hurry you up. You know, those are two teams that can just routinely score 75 to 90 points if you allow the game to get going at the tempo they want it. So some of their schemes were the things that jumped out at me. On the girls' side, obviously Carlon Cox at Huntington, your Coach Snyder, she's tremendous. One of the really underappreciated defenders in our league is OJ Mathis, Jess Mathis up there at Westfall. She has great length. She's one of those unique defenders, Bruce, that can probably guard just about all five spots on the floor because of her size and her versatility. So she's definitely one that jumps out at me.
Last week you said there was a lot of dribbling. Who's controlling the game with some good ball handling and decision making this year?
A quick comment on that, Bruce, that the more I watched, I think it goes back to a little bit of our playbook discussion, a little bit of that stuff. I think what we have is a lot of our special point guards, they are more scorers maybe than the say 15, 20 years ago. You had more the traditional point guard. Some of the certainly a Miles at Southeastern comes to mind. I think David's kid at Zane Trace is going to be like that. The kid that really was seeing the floor well this weekend was Logan Swackhammer, Uniota. He's tremendous. He's kind of a pass first type of kid in the open court. Sometimes can get a little loose with the ball, but man, I tell you, he's so unselfish with it, and he's really looking to make a play. So, you know, when you go to the girls' side, you know, you'll get kids, you know, like Wyman on the boys' side, you'll get a Sams or a Robinson. But again, they're a little bit more of that score mentality first. Maybe a Reuter comes to mind as more of just a floor general. She's playing with four kids that can all score. So again, Bruce, I think going back to that comment last week, I think it's a little bit more of the nature, the direction, if you will, of the culture of the game.
Okay. Who's simply playing at an elite level? Has their team playing extremely well early in the season?
Well, this is obvious here with me. The Wyman kid at Westfall is tremendous. That's not to take anything away from Hall and Swingle and Dye and some of the really hot weekends that some of our guys had. But the Wyman kid at Westfall just was coming out. I know he was sitting relaxing at the 5.5-minute mark Friday night, had 32. I mean, he literally could add 45, 50 points in that game. Then he had 27 the next night. So he's just been tremendous. And then on the girls' side, obviously, Ariel Sims got off to that hot start. Chandler Piketon had a big game. Stone Rock's been solid. But I really think we got to highlight Lexi Woods here at Paint Valley. She's really kind of coming in now as a sophomore. She returns as a top 6-7 player. And I think what we're going to find out with more performances like she had the other night, that she very well might be in the top 3 or 4 discussion.
Well, thank you, Shane, for that on the fast break. We want to remind everybody we'd love to hear from you, and you can get in touch with us several different ways. admin1@svcsportszone.com is our email address. You can catch us on Facebook. Shane maintains 2 profiles there, one being svcsportszone.com and Shane Combs as well. Twitter, I just looking here, Shane, you got nearly 700 followers now, and that's a lot of people following you to look in on what's going on in the SVC. We'd like to have some more, so you can find us there at SVC Sports Zone. And, of course, you can always call us at 740-569-3254. That's a DBK Media Services voicemail. Leave us a message there. If you have an actuality, you want to just give us a point, we are always looking to use your voice. If you don't want us to use your voice, just say so, because we will hire some professional or find someone off the street to read it or to quote it and so forth. So we'll get you on the show. We'd love to have some input. Shane's always on the email as well.
Maybe we can bring Eric Snyder back to read it for us.
We could do that. We could. I think we could get in negotiations with his agent and probably get him in here without too much problems. You were telling me one major topic you got a little feedback on this past week was Little League parents coaching, building method of one class at a time, and the word culture seems to be a word that keeps coming up in what you're talking about. Why don't you give us a little bit of highlights on that?
Had 5 or 6 different types of little feedback. Probably the one that intrigued me the most was a good conversation I had with a couple guys that are really involved with the Westfall community on Friday night, and we just got talking Little League a little bit. And there's one thing I need to be clear on here, Bruce, that maybe I haven't done a good job on. I think sometimes people really view my thoughts towards Little League as all negative. And that's probably a little bit fair, and I probably need to do a better job of explaining myself. Parents coaching is not all bad. There's no way in today's time that you can run a Little League without some parent involvement and some different things, because very rarely are you going to be in a situation where you have all the help necessary in-house or people that, without some parent involvement. Yeah. So please understand, the parents coaching is a good thing. Having some parents that have a background in basketball and so that's outstanding. The problem is the culture, and maybe I haven't done a good job of explaining this. It's the culture of Little League is the problem, because instead of preparing to play against, say, each other on a week-in, week-out basis, the idea of playing other schools is what puts these parents who are doing it in an unfair situation. You know, if I'm coaching a basketball team, I don't care if I'm coaching a third-grade team, seventh-grade team, JV team, and I look at my schedule and I say, okay, I have a game on Saturday, and I'm playing – okay, I'm coaching at Southeastern and I play Zane Trace. The common sense competitor in you, even though that winning may not be important or whatever, you still understand, okay, well, depending on the rules we're going to use, I may have to be ready to have them at least run an offense. We've got to have an out-of-bounds play. We're going to have to at least know what we're doing in terms of it. So what happens is you immediately start coaching for Saturday morning, say in a Tuesday night workout, where that culture is putting us in an unfair spot. Now, I had someone come back at me the other day and say, this was not the Westfall conversation. This was a separate conversation. They were saying the one thing they disagreed with me was from the number standpoint in the development, because they said it doesn't matter if you're playing Westfall versus Adena fourth grade on a Sunday afternoon, or if Westfall is playing against Westfall on Sunday afternoon, you're still going to just have a couple of the best kids probably playing some screen and roll, or probably handling the ball most of the time and taking most of the shots. And I looked at them like, think about what you're saying. I agree, but the difference is if there's three or four Westfall teams doing it from, say, a third, fourth grade division, and then there's three or four more of, say, six or seven kids on a team in the fifth, sixth grade, now all of a sudden in a weekend's time, I'm developing two and three ball handlers per grade instead of one. Mm-hmm. I'm getting more and more people shots than just one, because what happens is we're basically just handpicking one point guard in a grade in the third or fourth grade. And like I said, you better hope that kid grows to a certain height. You better hope that kid likes basketball enough to stay with it. You better hope that they're still in your district. There's a lot of factors that go there. So it's kind of like what I love about what we're doing in Bainbridge with Little League Baseball. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that some of the level of baseball night in, night out is what you'd see in some of the other area little leagues. Mm-hmm. But what we are doing is we're taking and giving every Paint Valley kid that wants an opportunity to play. So when I go down there and I watch games, I get excited because with the way they're split up, instead of just on all-star teams only, instead of getting one or two arms developed, I'm getting 7, 8, 9, 10 almost per age group developed, or at least getting the experience of being a pitcher. You're getting that many more shortstops. You're getting that many more catchers. So the concept of what I see, and it's not just point guards, Bruce. It might be a kid that's never going to play point guard in their life later on, but it might be that boy that Lou Postage was talking about so well last week on our show, and I'd really encourage fans to go back and listen to his take on this. But it might be that kid that is going to grow to 6'4 and be more of a 4 or 5 man, but maybe on his little league team, because again, he was the best player, he's going to get an opportunity to handle the ball a little bit more and develop those overall skills. So I think that the numbers and development is a big situation. But probably the last thing I would throw out there, it is why we have few teams with secondary players. What I'm describing in these unique situations, I think has led to why we have a change in the playbook. I think it's changed the culture of basketball to the point where we have the one or two kids that have really developed the overall game, and you don't see, this is girls and guys, you don't always see that fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh kid that can really make plays. And I get it. There's unique situations. But in those unique situations, those unique teams we're talking about, there's some other factors. There's some enrollment factors. There's some transferring factors. There's some special groups, family situations. We're all going to have a special group. Don't get me wrong. And that's part of the culture. Every school is going to have a situation maybe where a certain family comes through that the basketball is really important to them, and maybe there's two or three of them in a particular 2 or 3 year window. You'll see a situation where they're cousins or they're just their best friends growing up, whatever. So there's always unique situations, but I see very few programs being able to string 2-3 straight classes together. And again, I just have a hard time being convinced that that's not a direct culture of Little League basketball.
So what do you think of the situation where there might be like a local league, and then from the local league, there is the travel team that comes out of that and goes off and plays, and usually it's the more elite players there in the sixth grade, let's say, or something like that, that go. Does that provide the balance that you're looking for in you're developing the people locally, but then you're also exposing some of the, I guess, better players to what they might see elsewhere?
I think that I certainly think that's the happy medium. Back in some of the when I say back in the day, if you will, 15, 20 years ago, Little League programs were just getting established at a lot of the schools, but it's a situation where you would have your in-house, if you would, Little League, and you would have some travel teams and some different things, but it wasn't nearly it wasn't viewed from a situation of, oh no, if I don't make the sixth grade all-star team or whatever you want to call it, I shouldn't even go out for the seventh grade team. I think that's what's hurting, Bruce, is we're handpicking seven, eight kids in third, fourth, fifth, sixth grades. What's happening is a lot of these kids, it's happening at smaller schools. They're getting turned away from basketball by the time it's even time to try out for the seventh grade team. The happy medium for today's culture of what I just described is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably where we at least need to agree to disagree, but say, okay, how can we go about this and what's best for your program, and try to at least move some of this travel basketball back to after the holidays, you know, maybe in January. Mm-hmm. At least allow the varsity coach and his staff and any other helpers that he or she's able to put together to have some of that in-house Little League, to where you can get everybody involved. And like you said, there's always going to be case. We've had such a great volleyball discussion, Bruce, and girls, volleyball versus basketball.
Yeah.
I think this is where the club volleyball has been so incredibly successful for high school volleyball, is the fact that the schools don't have to stamp their name on it. You're able to just send your kids away. Hey, why don't you go play here? Try to get on this team. Try to get on this team. Try to get on this team. And they're playing all together. But it's everybody. You see what I'm saying? It's not one of those where there's only a third grade team and these six or seven made it. And then next year, these same six or seven made it, and then six or seven made it, and so forth. And like Coach Postes was talking about last week, a lot of times we overlook a kid because he's a little clumsy in the fourth grade.
Right.
But is all of a sudden wakes up one morning as a sophomore, he's 6'3".
Yeah.
but all of a sudden he's not interested in basketball. Isn't that a shame? So I think what you're describing is certainly the happy medium, if you will, Bruce, that's probably going to have to combine a little bit with the old and the new. And I do think there's a recipe there for success. But I certainly wanted to clarify this week that I think it's more of a culture. I don't think it's something I'm blaming parents who coach at all. I think, again, it's their job to try to get some kids ready to go out and play in a basketball game in the third grade, whatever that means. That you know, you have to have some plays in, you have to have some different organization in, and that puts them in a really unfair spot. So where you should be teaching kids how to dribble, pass, and catch, you're trying to teach them a couple out of bounds plays on a Tuesday night practice.
All right. Well, we'd love to hear what you out there in the listenership would like to talk about that. It's a broad topic, lots of opinions, and we'd like to hear from you. And you can just go to svcsportszone.com and find all the ways you can interact with us. Next up, we talk boys, where we find perfect teams trying to survive adversity, and some teams simply trying to adjust to a new identity. Welcome back to episode 142 of SBC Sports Talk. Bruce Knox along with Shane Combs here, taking you through SBC basketball. Now it's the boys' turn. Unioto, Edina, and Westfall, all 3-0, Shane, as you predicted, or they were predicting that they'd be in the top spots anyway. What do you think of this trio?
Well, like you said, this was kind of a I don't want to say easy weekend, but it was a weekend that, you know, didn't have some of the top teams going head to head, if you will. A couple teams, as you mentioned there in your lead in, that just going through some situations that they're going to try to be in survival mode. But you talk Unioto, Edina, Westfall off to the perfect start. They're going to have some better matchups, obviously the Edina Westfall matchup coming up here. But the thing I guess I look at is Unioto is so deep, so complete. I'd mentioned out on Twitter the thing I was looking for in Unioto Huntington. Obviously, Huntington's going to be, you know, a team that's going to struggle to play in a game with Unioto at this point and where those two programs are at. But I do think Huntington played a lot harder Saturday night than they did on Friday night. And then from the Unioto side of things, I knew that they could dominate tempo. I knew that they could dominate the glass. I was looking to see how are they going to execute. I thought it was a chance for Coach Hoops to see his kids execute in the half court against some zone. And boy, did they shoot it well. And when Uniota shoots it that well, I don't know exactly who's going to be able to compete with them. They hit 8 threes on the night, I believe, as a team. And when they do that, combined with all their other weapons, that they're going to be a bear to handle. As far as Adina, the question I was asking is, could they go back to back on a weekend against two teams that they are better than those particular opponents and really get it done on the defensive end? And it sounds like they did in spurts. When I heard Coach Smith, he still thinks they have a long way to go. But Friday night, it was the third quarter. They really started to take control, and then they really started quick on Saturday night. Hall and Thomas both getting going. That's certainly a plus. And then with Westfall, so skilled, really, really skilled. We mentioned on the preview show that they had three of the top five scorers back in the league. Well, three of the six, if you count Anthony McFadden, who's not playing yet for Payne Valley. But, you know, Bruce, they're so improved athletically. We talked about the boys who, when they play freshman, sophomore, sometimes just physically behind. Well now they've just grown up, if you will. They're stronger. They're faster. So those three teams certainly showcasing exactly what I thought to see. Each of them certainly has some things there that those particular coaches are going to have to focus on. Uniota's is just going to be staying big picture in mind. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just honestly, I don't know who exactly is going to push them. Obviously, Westfall Adina have the best chance, but going to be very, very difficult. And then Adina, we touched on at the defensive end there. And then Westfall, intrigued to see on Saturday night, Bruce. I knew Coach Cox and Southeastern would not want to get baited into the tempo, and I was curious to see what would Westfall look like in a game that was played more in, say, the 50s or 60s. To their credit, they were able to get 66 on the board. Southeastern obviously slowed the game down a little bit, but that's a credit again to an experienced team who's able to play multiple styles and then eventually get the game into your style. So yeah, those three teams really intriguing to watch. I'm really looking forward to breaking them down further as the year goes on.
Well, as I look at the SVC standings on the boys basketball page on svcsportszone.com, I see that Zane Trace and Paint Valley still at they're at 1-1 in the league, going through some injuries we found out about. And you think they'd be happy if you were them? Would you be happy with that split?
I think you must have to be. I mean, you look at it from Zane Trace's perspective. They, especially playing Uniota,
yeah,
and then being able to go on the road there and get a win Saturday night out of Paint Valley, and then with Paint Valley holding serve, if you will, there against Piketon, and then obviously you would love to have the opportunity to play Zane Trace without Maury if you're looking at it from a competition standpoint. But it just sounds like I was asking on the X factors. Be you knew Davidson and Swingle were kind of. Post their numbers as they normally do, but it sounds like Gibson and was really big for Zane Trace. They also had some nice performances from some other kids. Athletically, I think the depth of athletes is probably the difference in that game. But if you look down through some of the different scoring there, I know Darby Pillow also is in double figures, 6-for-6 from the line. So, I guess they would be happy with the split. Obviously, the direction of these two teams is going to come down to the recovery of those two kids. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, they've shown the ability that they can compete and win some games. But if they're going to truly – you're talking about in Mowry – one of the great scorers to ever play in our conference.
Sure.
And then with McFadden, you're talking about one of the great three sport athletes in recent history here in the Cider Valley Conference. So you just don't lose pieces like that and not fill it. But yeah, I think if you ask Coach Shoemaker, Coach Coker, they'd be happy. That's the big key here too. We're talking about experienced coaches.
Yeah.
This isn't
the
first time they've ever dealt with an injury.
Not their first.
So they're able, you know, I'm sure they're able to kind of go back on their experience. They're able to keep big picture in mind, and that's going to really help both those teams.
Huntington, Piketon, and Southeastern all 0-2 at this point. How about concerns for those teams?
Not really, to be honest. And here's why I say that. I think for different reasons. You know, Huntington-Piketon, I think you're talking about two teams that are just they're kind of involved in the rebuilding process. You know, Huntington is taking some steps forward. I don't know how many times it's going to show up on the scoreboard, but you know, they're going through a process that this Westfall group kind of, I said on the preview show, went through in years past. Piketon rebuilding for the first time in a long time, and they have some pieces. They have some kids that can play. You heard me mention earlier, Bruce, about some of the Uniota girls going through the scouting report change, if you will. Mm-hmm. I heard Coach Brapson talk about it the other night on the radio, and he's exactly right. Kids such as Moore and Zimmerman Veach, some of those kids, I'd say they probably fifth, sixth, seventh on the scouting report board of opponents in years past, where now they're right there at the top. Mm-hmm. So attention to detail on their game, plus the elite defenders I talked about. There's a big difference. There's a big difference in terms of you going out and drawing the other team's best guard defender compared to their third defender. Mm-hmm. That's just huge. I mean, it's kind of what the complete team is, say, a Uniota is going to get to benefit from. The Kennedy kid had a really nice weekend here, kind of in his varsity debut here as a sophomore for Uniota. Again, going to be a tremendous player, great, great shooter. But you also got to understand, he's stepping into that role with a much more relaxed, comfortable approach, if you will, because Uniota's drawing attention to four, five, six other kids, you know, and he's able to just kind of step in and play his role. So it's night and day, and what that means. The team that I'm not concerned about at all right now, Bruce, is Southeastern. I know they're 0-2 in the league, 0-3 overall. Not time to panic at all there. You look at Washington Courthouse, Edina, Westfall. All three of those basketball teams very capable of winning anywhere from 15 to 20 basketball games this year. So I wouldn't get too worked up there. I think Coach Cox will right the ship there. And I think, to be fair to the Panthers, you're going to have to give it another, well, I'll say 2 weeks before you really start to form an opinion on them.
All right. Well, we've got a full slate coming up on Friday, December 11th of league play. So we'll see how things work out, and we'll chew on it again next week. Our final segment throughout the basketball season will be our post-game comments, and brought to you, as it is each and every week, by Crown Hill Golf Club. Shane just mentioned them a little bit ago. Check out their website at crownhillgolfclub.com. And anytime you visit, please, please make sure to tell Kevin or Dave that svcsportszone.com sent you. So here we go in this week's post-game segment, and it's all centered around this, Shane. What was your favorite part of this show, and what feedback are you most eager to hear from the fans?
Well, Bruce, I think in terms of when I think of why we do the show, it's basically the foundation of the website. Obviously, we want to highlight players, and we want to talk about the players who do different things. Obviously, scoring has a lead headline, if you will, when you look at results from games. This week we tried to look at some different things, but let me be selfish here for a second. Beyond just looking at some of the players, I absolutely love the basketball. I don't think I can remember in years past, and maybe it is, and I'm just getting old and don't remember the basketball discussion that has been breaking out over the last two or three weeks in my email, texting, seeing people at games, even ended up seeing somebody in town the other night and mm-hmm. ended up talking basketball for 10 minutes. That's what I really appreciate, some coaching philosophy. You and I talked scouting report last week off the air, and I had some good conversations with that. I would love to get more feedback from fans on that. You know, philosophy, I think I might have mentioned this last week, but I had a follow-up conversation with a couple other people about just something as simple as, should you front the post, play behind? Why do you choose to do that? Mm-hmm. Zone, man-to-man, different things, the quick hitter discussion, all of these different coaching philosophy things are so intrigued. And almost every time that I'm talking basketball with someone, even in those types of conversations, it always seems to have some sort of link back to Little League, to junior high, to freshman, to JV, and how that impacts each level. So I think it all just kind of ties in together, and I think in doing that, we can still highlight all of the teams and the kids quite well the way we have. But Maybe another one, Bruce, would be give me the climate of your program. I will tell you if I agree or disagree. You know what I mean? This will be an opportunity for you to just be a straight shooter, be honest. Obviously, we don't have to have your name if you don't want us to, or yeah, I'll never include a person's name. But just let us know the climate of your program. I'll tell you why I agree or disagree or things like that. It might give us an opportunity to really break down, because I think sometimes, again, we get so wrapped up in how good are we this year that maybe we don't totally look at, well, where's the program's direction been over the last 5, 6, 7 years? Where do we look at it going in the next 5, 6, 7 years? So I think that would be a fun discussion as well, and it might give us an opportunity to highlight some former players, some current players, and some of our younger levels that are coming up. Because keep in mind, on the website you can check out some of our junior high pages, our JV pages. We do all of those particular things. So I think that those are some of the things that jump out at me as really intriguing. Let me throw that right back at you, Bruce, before we get out of here this week. Some things that maybe jumped out at you. What was maybe a favorite part of your show, or something that maybe left you wanting more from me in terms of my response?
Well, I think the conversation about the Little League, that we could talk for weeks about that, I think, because I think everybody's got a different situation. You know, your local community has run it this way. You probably have a natural prejudice towards that way it's run. So everybody's got an opinion on that. Then you also probably have your own thoughts about, you know, if I were in charge, this is the way I would run it. And a lot of us haven't had coaching experience, so particularly at the high school level. So I think, you know, those of you that have had coaching experience probably view it a little differently than those of us who have had kids in the program. You know, I don't make any secret of the fact that my kids didn't go on to play, but we were in the Little League and, you know, we did the travel team and everything like that. And that kind of, you know, you have some opinions about how that worked out based on what your experiences were. So I think that could go on for weeks. We could talk about that, and probably for years. If we go into season 6, 7, and 8, we'll probably still be talking about that, because it is something that just permeates the whole discussion, just like you said. I talked about it after we got off of recording, was as somebody that sits on the sideline and just as an observer, I hear so much about the scouting report. You've mentioned it 2 or 3 times here. And so one of the things I kind of gave to Shane to think about was, How are scouting reports done? What does one look for, a coach look for, in a scouting report? I always see the coaches from other teams coming into the gym. What are they writing on those envelopes or, you know, clipboards that they bring and so forth? And so I thought I ask about that, and I thought that would be a good topic for a show. But as always, we're looking for feedback from the listenership, and you know, if you've got an idea, no matter how — this is kind of like a brainstorming session here — if no matter how off the wall you might think it is,
right.
I think we'd love to hear about it, and we may use it, may not, and don't get upset if we don't use it, because we do get a lot of communications, and sometimes, you know, we only have 45, 50 minutes to talk about it. We may not be able to get everything in. That's for sure. So there's just a lot of things that you can talk about, you know, that go into a basketball program.
Absolutely. And I think maybe that's where I use the word climate of the program. Yeah, it can be anything and everything that you just want to talk about. So make no mistake about it, we're still going to highlight kids and results and programs and things like that. But I also think this show can be a platform to just kind of allow us to just talk and make things better in our community to make these sports continue to grow.
You know, you talked about the climate of a program, and I think you're kind of talking about the, you know, the long-term climate of a program. But, you know, for the kid that's a sophomore, they're in the long term, he's out of there. So I think sometimes parents base their opinion on, you know, what's going to happen in the next year or two.
Yeah, well, and you know, go ahead and give it to me that way. I think it's fair. When I use the word climate, I think it's fair to say I think the program over the last 5 years is trending in the right direction. It's currently this. I'm concerned that it's going to be this, or right now I don't like this. I see some long-term improvement. But like you said, my kid's a sophomore. I want something now. Yeah. All of those things, again, I think can make great discussions. And there can be things that I think that we can highlight and really have some basketball discussion. So yeah, let us know. I don't care how you do it, be it email, text, see me at a game, whatever. No matter how we get it, the idea is to get it on the show.
Yep. Well, that's episode 142, Shainer. And so until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for everyone here at DBK Media Services, and for Shane Combs, this is Bruce Knox, reminding you to keep visiting svcsportszone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportszone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.